This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the preview show edition of the Blue Monday podcast, a three times weekly show looking into all things Ipswich Town. I'm your host, Richard Woodward, and I'm delighted to welcome back the brilliant Harry from Bath. Harry, how's it going?
All good at this end, Rich. All good. A fantastic week and still on something of a high after last week's live show.
It was great, wasn't it? I was thinking that I needed to get Space Odyssey, 2001 Space Odyssey, booming in the background for my intro. But that's a Blue Monday Live thing, I think. We'll keep that for that, shall we?
Please.
It wasn't too much, was it, that intro?
No, it was fine. No, it was good fun. It was good fun. There was a lot of love in the room, and that was fantastic. And the thing I would say to it is, you know, Rich and I, we put out this show. We're just fans. Ben says this all the time. We're just supporters trying to make sense of it all and sort of find out, piece together what we know and try and make sense of it. But, you know, Rich and I would put this together on a Thursday evening, and then afterwards I'll go in and have supper and have a chat at home and think, well, say, oh, well, I think we did this well and this well. You've no idea what the response is like. So the live show, from our point of view, was utterly wonderful to get so many kind comments, such kind feedback, and to meet everybody. It was really, really appreciated. And just want to say a heartfelt thank you to you all, A, for coming, giving up your evenings to come along, and for sharing so much kind feedback. Deeply, deeply appreciated. That's how I felt. I don't know about you.
Absolutely, but that's right. Yeah, that's, and I guess I have some moderate apologies to make, because I was in kind of, when life is stressful, I generally go into lockdown mode, and there was so much stuff that could have gone wrong on Saturday. The great thing is it didn't. And everything worked like clockwork. The Stu, the sound guy, he was brilliant. The venue, I think, was just the right size. I think we just had about enough chairs. But I'm there kind of with this laptop full of stuff, waiting for a cable to fail or a battery to go wrong or a video to die or something like that. And none of that happened. But until I could get to the end, I couldn't really enjoy it. So apologies if anyone came up and thought, tell you what, Rich is a bit of an arse, isn't he? It was purely the stress of making it all work, and I'm glad it did. So please come and say hello if you spot me. I'll be at Wigan and Reading and all that stuff. And hopefully I wasn't too abrupt with anyone. But really enjoyable. Yeah. And you said it on the night as well. Kudos to Ben and Shaley as well for just making it all happen and sorting us all out. And it was great fun. And thank you, everyone, for coming. You know, paying money and giving up your Saturday evening to come and sit with us and chat football. Nothing better, really. I just could have done with maybe a few more beers, maybe.
It was a wonderful, wonderful evening. It was great as well to be able to thank Ben, because we work with Ben a lot behind the scenes. People don't know what it's like working with him off camera, as it were, and the guy's an absolute star. He put so much into this, and we're just a kind bunch of fans, really, all just trying to make sense of the world. And Ben is such a gentle guiding hand for us all. So it was great to be able to thank him as well, because if anyone deserves it, he really does.
Yeah, spot on.
It was great,
and it sounds like
great evening.
That might not be the last of them either. So We're trying to get a Southwest/Midlands location maybe lined up, maybe an away trip, but the guys weren't having that, were they? So I think it'll be Cape Ipswich.
But... Yeah. No, we were chatting about it on the WhatsApp group, and I kind of pitched in the idea of having one up in Norwich, and we thought just
behind
just
enemy lines. Them up.
You probably absolutely. You need a police guard though for that one, I think, and passports and driving license.
Yes.
You wouldn't be let over the border.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. No, I don't think we'll go there. Anyway,
we won't.
Great stuff. And on a related point, I do want to say, and I'm saying it early, Rich, we're doing this again on Thursday evening. Rich has put up a sliding doors video looking at 10 moments in ITFC history over probably the last 20 or so years where, had the door slid in a different way, the future, the outcome could have been very, very different and positive. Well worth watching. Very insightful, thoughtful, brilliant, and quite forensic as well. When you look back and think, oh God, he's absolutely right. I won't spoil, no spoilers in terms of the detail, but it's on YouTube. If you can't find it, look on at Ipswich, or it's on the app, the Blue Monday. It's on the app Blue Monday.
ITFC
Twitter feed,
yeah.
Blue Monday ITFC. It's got to be watched. It is absolutely got to be watched. It's one of those. I've watched it once. I want to go away and watch it two or three more times just to let it go through the filter beds. It's very, very insightful.
Thank you, Harry.
Rich is now probably. I'm talking straight to the camera. I'm not looking at his face, but it is. It's the mother of all plugs because it really deserves it. So anyway, there it is.
Oh,
so
I appreciate that, Harry. Yeah.
Another good thing during the week if you've got a quiet bit. Yeah.
Yeah, that's been a few weeks, if not maybe a month or two in the works. That and I recorded the This Week in ITFC History for Stat and Dave, and then partway through, I think their first game was 3-2 against Sheffield United in the 92-93 season when it snowed. I remember that game. I was there. And it just got worse as the night went on. And then at the end of it, I think Dave piped up going, I'll tell you what, you know, Sheffield United end up getting relegated that season. They go down with the last kick of the last match of that season. And Dave was saying, I'll tell you what, you know, if we hadn't stayed up that season, the next season where we got, you know, smashed by Man United 9-0 and that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
And then I think Stats said, oh yeah, but we would have never got Burnley. That is number 9 on my list. It was almost verbatim. Yeah. I was going, no guys, no, but it was a perfect segue. So yeah, there's from my time watching ITFC, so it goes back, I guess the 92-93 season will be the first one. Please watch it. Please retweet if you like it. If I've got anything, if I've missed anything, ping us a tweet or a comment in the video as well. But yeah, thank you very much for mentioning it, Harry. I'll probably do a subtle plug at the end as well. But hopefully people enjoy it.
It is very good. It really is. Yeah.
Let's look forward a little bit. Well, let's move through the week because there was a couple of bits of action. Should we start with Stoke? Let's go back to the Stoke 1-0. I'd quite like to talk about the Coventry under 23 match, but let's do Stoke first. Let's do it in chronological order. 1-1, good last minute draw. And we love a last minute goal, don't we, Harry? And a goal from a corner as well. That's been fairly rare. What are your thoughts? I guess the one thing I would pick out, and you mentioned it, is that they might go to the 4-5-1. They might dump the diamond, and that was how it played out.
Yeah, it was good. It was good, and it did worry me because Ince was always the one. We've always been struggled when you come up against a player who's a bit quick and a bit direct. And Ince, in the first game up there in the wet and windy December afternoon, he did us. It was quiet all game, and then suddenly a moment of real class. And I was frightened. I was hoping that they'd stick with the diamond because when they'd played it the previous week against Wigan, the highlights were painful. They were so static that you could see they were all worried about where do I need to be rather than actually thinking about the game. So they played with more fluidity against us. The goal was, oh dear, there was a very funny poll on TWTD where there were the various options for who to blame. I think there was Bart, Jonas, Pennington, and Brenner Woolley, I think, or a combination of them all. It was something like that anyway. And Brenner Woolley got a lot of votes, which I thought was rather funny. Nothing against, you know, it's just a great unwashed, I suppose, just having their word. But anyway, it's but that aside, I felt Bart, I've always wanted him to be a bit more vocal. I've seen other games where he needs to be just, you know, this is my area and you're going to damn well do what I tell you.
He should have clattered everyone out of the way, shouldn't he?
He just should have just taken everybody out, anybody else, the referee, anyone in the way, just take them all out. My ball, end of discussion. But still, as I say, some good came out of it with the late goal. A couple of thoughts, the pattern of the game, a couple of side points. Allow for the fact that tiredness had an impact. 3 games in 6 days. It hasn't been discussed. And I wonder whether that did play a part in some of the slightly ragged play from the younger players.
And this illness that's been going around as well.
Yeah.
Kind of helped.
Yeah, so I think we should cut them a bit of slack for that, particularly as the first game, you know, was against Norwich. This wasn't an easy week. Norwich, Frank Lampard's Derby and Stoke, you know, that's three big games. So allow for that. What else? Judge's chipped corner, I have to say this, it was so like Aaron Cresswell. That's what it reminded me of. Cresswell, do you remember his late goal against Derby, when we got the late winner against Derby, the Johnny Williams night? Cresswell put one of those corners in. I love a chipped corner rather than just one that's driven or floated, because a chipped one, you beat the first man, it's still got some pace and tempo, and you're working with the angle against you, so you can actually drill it in with some power.
It just landed lovely on Keane's head, didn't he? It was just perfect.
Absolutely nailed it. It was brilliant. So that was superb as well. And praise to Lambert. I wrote down here, the tactical switch for the goal was the sort of thing that managers have been doing to us all season. They'll spot something, they'll make a tiny little a little flick, something new, something a bit different, and they'll completely unlock us. And sending on Insiala right at the end was absolute gamesmanship. It was brilliant. Apparently, I didn't see, was it Dave was saying it, or was it Ben, was that he was screaming, Lambert was saying, he's got to get on. He was kind of hammering at the fourth official, let him on before the corner gets taken. And it caused complete confusion. I went on the Stoke forum just to see what they were saying about it. They were doing their nut. They were absolutely furious. They saw what had happened. Jones was mugged by Lambert, basically, was their version of the narrative, that he should have seen this coming. Why wasn't there someone on the back post? Everybody was standing there. Nobody was doing anything. And it was superb. It really was. Side point to that, the crowd played a huge part in that equaliser. Do not underestimate it. I was sitting in the co-op. We could see the mosh pit that was the North Stand.
I was in section six, it was phenomenal.
It was great. As I say, you know, sitting, you know, as I say, you reach a certain age when the co-op is really where you want to go. Anyway, no, I like to go
our show is like the podcast equivalent of the co-op stand, isn't it?
It is. It's a version of that, exactly. Yes, yes. What's Ben's word? Highbrow. That's the word. But watching, we could see the atmosphere. And Lambert, I know some of it you might say is him just, you know, trying to get everybody enthused, which is what he does. But it was genuine. You could see, you know, and you could see the Stoke players looking at this. And I picked up some feedback from another town fan during the week saying that after the game, the Stoke players were saying to people on our side, some of our backroom staff, that they were surprised at the atmosphere. They thought 1-0 up against a team rooted to the table, they'd have expected us to go to fall apart. But it wasn't like that. We just kept at them and at them and at them. And I do think, mirroring forward to Wigan, we'll talk more about it later, that is a weapon we actually have got. You know, if after an hour it's nil all and they're not playing well, oh, we should be beating this lot, they're at the bottom of the table. You're not. We might be bottom of the table, but I don't think we're playing like a bottom of the table team at the moment. We may not be playoffs quality, but we're not falling apart. The confidence is coming together. In the course of the flow of the game, Rich, the other things I picked up were, from where I was sitting, you could see the balance coming into the team. Several times when we were breaking forward, there was one incident late in the game, I think it was Edwards, and certainly Bree on the right-hand side.
They linked up quite well there.
He did. Both of them played. Bree particularly, I was very impressed with him. Ooh. Very, very composed, particularly in the diamond where the fullbacks get stressed. You know, as a right back, he was holding his own. But when he was breaking forward, there were suddenly four breaking into the box. Under Hurst, that simply wasn't happening. You might get one if you were lucky breaking in. And just as equally, in the first half, there were a couple of instances, once with Edwards, and I think twice with Ince, where they were hitting us on the counter, Stoke. They were breaking forward. And I looked at one station and I said, hang on, there's five Town players coming back to cover. You could see the shape and the balance and the energy within the team was definitely there. And just that semblance of sort of organization.
There's a structure, isn't there?
Structure is definitely there. So anything else? As I say, you know, being optimistic, we could be really cooking by March if this continues. As I say, we knew it was always going to take a few weeks to get the attacking quartet working and to get, you know, to start playing with more creative form. But against that, though, we are playing cup football now, really. We can't wear defeats in big games, including Wigan. But it's really great to see the direction of travel is fantastic at the moment. That's my sixth one.
I agree with all of that. And I think the symbolism of the late goal as well. So there was a not giving up, which is important. Yeah. There was a goal from a set piece, which, as I mentioned, we haven't been particularly prolific at for quite a while, actually. So I think that kind of was a good endorsement. And as you say, the atmosphere was really good. And what I love is this season, and I'm not sure I've heard it for quite a while, and unless it's a specific, like a one-off game where there's just such a great outcome or it's been really pivotal, the atmosphere continues after the final whistle, doesn't it? I love those videos on the pitch that the club do. But actually, even when the players have walked down the tunnel, you can still hear the Blue Action guys still going on. You can hear people walking out of the stadium, chanting as well. And I think, you know, there's a lot of maybe cynicism about Lambert kind of stoking this up and trying to get, you know, and then it's a bit of a facade. And we've talked about this before. Do you know what? I think it's just good that people want to be at the ground and want to contribute to the atmosphere. And if Lambert needs to kind of do that, and people maybe, you know, see it as a cynical thing, I think it's just so important just to build everyone's joy of being at the match again. I'm a big fan of it, and long may it continue as well.
Yeah, hear her.
I was quickly going to talk Coventry.
Coventry, you went to the under-23s game, yes.
I took half a day off work, and it was wet, cold, and Ipswich lost. And I, the only highlight, and this is a nod of my cap to Mikey, and a really lovely sausage roll in the Ricoh Arena afterwards. That was the highlight of the day. We went down 1-0. Coventry were the better team in the first half. And it was a similar story for us for most of the game, particularly in the second half when we had a lot more of the ball around the 18-yard box. We just couldn't make it click. And the keeper didn't really have a huge amount to do. When he did have things to do, it was Corey Adai. He's quite a big lanky keeper. There was a few flaps, and you kind of thought, you know, maybe there's a chance to test him a little bit more, but we didn't really do that. It was my first time seeing the under-23s this season, and there was, a few players caught my eye. One, Corey Ndaba, who signed his new first pro deal this week, looked quite physical. I like the look of Brett McGavin. I don't know if you picked up any of these when you saw them earlier in the season.
I saw El Mazzuni was the one who caught my eye.
He was okay. I'm not sure he played in a position that worked for him, or the system didn't really work for him. He was good on the ball, but I didn't see a huge amount of him. He was kind of the honourable mentions, along with Barry Cotter, who was playing a centre-back, but every now and then did a marauding centre-back run to the halfway line with the ball. Exactly my expression. Spence was at right-back.
So was it? It was a back four rather than a back three.
Yeah, it was a back four.
Okay.
So it was Pat Webber at left back. Yeah. Cotter and Ndaba, and then Spence at right back.
Okay.
I said Ndaba could have scored from a corner. Actually, he had a free header. Should have probably put it on target. But just his stature, his physicality was good in the air. Seemed to be quite calm as well, which I think is a good. Good feature for a centre back as well, but Lunis Fudil, I think, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, he came on as a sub. Very tricky winger, good dribbler, great with the ball down the right hand side. He was impressive. But Brett McGavin was the pick for me. Similar stature to a young Steven Gerrard in terms of his physicality. You know, when Gerrard was young, before he filled out a bit, he was quite gangly. He kind of had his limbs kind of went out a little bit, and McGavin was very similar to that. Really good on the ball, very calm central midfield presence, kind of sat back a little bit, good recycling the ball, good moving things forward, and took a good set piece as well. So he'd be my tip.
That's interesting. You often see this with central midfielders. I remember years ago, Danny Drinkwater, when he was at Leicester, when he came, I think it was at Nigel Pearson was the manager, and the Leicester fans could see over the summer he had been on the weights.
Right.
And I remember seeing it with Teddy Bishop as well when he was with us. And before, in his early, Bishop Mark 1, if I can describe it, before his injuries. And again, the first season he was there, and he was tricky, and he was quite elastic. And then as he started to build up, Luke Hyam as well was the other one. We saw that as well. You see them blossoming, and the real midfielder coming out when they get that physicality then suddenly, which you simply have to have in the modern game. It's so strength-based. So the pattern of the game, did it flow really well? Because that's the thing that struck me. I saw them against Bristol City, a very young Bristol City team, I have to say, back in the late autumn, and the geometry of the team was lovely. They were just knocking the ball around for fun, and it was 2-0. If they needed a third, I'm sure they could have found it. It was a comfortable win.
So Coventry were a third in the under-23s league, and generally people probably don't know too much about Coventry as a club. Yes, they've had their off the field problems, but they've always brought through their own players. The likes of Cyrus Christie is probably a name that people might know, who's come through. Obviously Madison as well. I don't think he I think they signed him possibly, but he's another one. So they've always brought through their own players in the first team at the moment. There's quite a lot as well. So a tough opposition. I think I generally, my impression was that we were more technically proficient, and definitely for the front our two thirds of the pitch before their 18 yard line ish, we were really good. We were really comfortable at moving the ball around, and the defenders were doing that as well. All throughout the team, everyone looked comfortable with the ball. It just felt that when they got to the 18 yard line, Coventry kind of blocked them out maybe a little bit. In the terms of the first teamers that were in the team, Spence kind of was in passenger mode. He was kind of doing the minimum he needed and was fairly comfortable, but didn't shine. Dawkins played as well, and he was on the bench on Saturday, I think, actually, and was okay, but again didn't stand out. And Nyden played the whole match. Didn't really feature too much, I'll be honest. He was he was definitely up against more physical, taller players, and I think that kind of didn't work for him. I think he was kind of shrugged off the ball quite a lot. But yeah, McGavin would be the one. He also reminded me a bit of Owen Garvin. That would be my comparison as well. So yeah, a couple of few there to look out for. And Doig was there as well, Chris Doig. I saw him walking down. He was down at the dugouts. I tweeted it, and people kind of thought, "Oh, is Rich joking?" But they were. People were pleased to see him. The bench were really kind to him, and they had good old long chat. Brian Klug sat with him in the second half, and some of the players coming off as well shook his hand and looked pleased to see him. So, yeah. Do we want to talk about this Paul Hurst podcast very briefly? Because obviously,
we can do.
There's some stuff there on that one, but.
Yeah, we can touch on it. No problem at all. It's interesting. Yeah, we don't know the half of what went on behind the scenes, to be honest. We're always trying to, we're looking in and trying to piece it together. And when it goes badly wrong, you know, then, you know, all sorts of, you know, all sorts of conspiracy theories can come out. But the Hurst interview, I did listen to it. That sounded, just on finally on commentary, it sounded really reassuring that the, you know, the progress that we've seen over the season hasn't been lost, even though we lost the game, that the kind of the shape of the team, the, you know, that's still very much continuing on.
Cause and I'd be happy for, I think we talked about this. I don't think we had, did we have a question about this on Blue Monday Live about the number of maybe chucking players in from the academy with a few games to go? I don't know if someone was talking to me about that possibly on the night, but you know, I'd be quite happy with McGavin, Ndaba, Ilmazuni, Joe mentioned Bailey Clements. I think there's a handful of players there that could conceivably be in the team. If the worst happens and we've got maybe four or five games to go, I'd be quite happy to see that.
Against the right opponents. I mean, it definitely worked brilliantly against Reading last year because they were so brittle and lacking confidence. But some teams,
maybe not Leeds in the last day.
No.
That depends if we want Leeds to win or not. I was having an interesting debate about that earlier. We might want to be supporting Leeds on the last day of the season.
Absolutely. You know, bring all the spies you want down and have a few more. You know, we'll set you up with seats and organise sausage rolls for them all.
That's the whole of the Cobalt stage.
Exactly. That'd be very funny. Hurst was interesting. I listened to it. I did have a proper listen all the way through. A few things leapt out. It was insightful. I think the positives for me were that he did care about Ipswich. I think it did hit him. And I think, but I also think the failure caught him completely by surprise. It goes back to my theory that he underestimated the leap between League One and the Championship. And I think it's something actually Paul Cook will come on to, the Wigan manager, might be having to accept as well. But one of the patterns that came out was the way a lot of things, he seemed to have a lot of bad luck. There were a lot of excuses. That was one theme.
I was about to say there's no such thing as you make your own luck or whatever.
Exactly. You know, in playoffs, bad decisions going wrong or whatever. And, you know, there was all of the way through, like, he talked about the red hot day at Wembley in the playoff final. I remember going on the Shrewsbury message board when they were absolutely furious that they went out and did a pre-match training routine. And we obviously, Ben was there. He'd know. It'd be interesting to get his take on it. But he said that the players were baked, but, you know, from the pre-match, they did a proper pre-match training regime, you know, in an enclosed Wembley Stadium on a blisteringly hot May day. So you've got that. The other thing which made me smile was the pattern. You talked about conceding from set pieces at his previous clubs, which I kind of went, we've heard that before. In hindsight, I mean, it was interesting to listen to, really. It's kind of more academic now. But my sense was, he should have stayed at Shrewsbury and done a Chris Wilder or a Neil Harris, come up with the team, stayed there and carried on with it. But maybe he felt...
It's a difficult one for him to turn down, isn't it? For anyone who's not aware of it, by the way, it's not the top 20 podcast. Two good guys there, George, and I forget the other guy's name, Ali, I think, who do some really great stuff on the Football League.
Brilliant interviewer. He really did. It was a brilliant interviewer. Yeah, he really prepped up brilliantly for it. It was fantastic.
There was another thing that I'm trying to remember. He lamented fitness quite a lot, and he was talking about this when he was at Ipswich as well. And you wonder whether the fitness was too much of a fixation rather than actual tactics and systems of play when he was with us, maybe. Because he moaned about that quite a lot, didn't he? Moaned about the previous pre-season regimes. Moaned about, you know, the likes of maybe Dizel coming back from injuries. He's definitely moaned about Adeyemi and Hughes, didn't he? And I wonder whether that was too much of a consideration rather than actually how we set ourselves up to win the match. But
yeah,
I don't know whether you have thoughts on that.
I think it was definitely fitness over tactics, and the tactics was the thing that kind of, in hindsight, was the thing that completely undid him, because he was outthought time and time again by... You could see Lambert doing it a little bit to Jones on Saturday with Stoke.
Yeah, great show.
You know, so you could see a similar parallel there. And I think that was the thing, that he just kept getting caught. It's such a streetwise league. And exactly, you know, focusing on fitness. Ben said it, I think, in his interview in the Talk Norwich podcast. I think he's a great lower league manager, and he will come back in League Two or League One team, where it is all about fitness organisation and just, you know, a good basic tactical overlay, you know, sort of overlay within that. But when you look at some of the clever managers sort of prowling around in the Championship, and they've all got
McCarthy has made a career out of eating the likes of Hurst for breakfast, getting a 1-0 win out of nothing, and I think we've agreed he's naive, wasn't he, when he came to us, and hopefully it's a useful learning for him. But I wonder whether the Championship is probably a bit too far for him. But
We'll find out. So there may at some point be a podcast in the future where you could spend an hour listing what went wrong, all the things that happened. Not all Hurst's fault, though, let's be honest as well. Right. So, you know, when things go that badly wrong, it's really just one thing that's caused it.
And he's number 10 on my video, by the way, the sliding door.
He is, yes. It starts off with Rotherham. Yes, the 1-0 defeat. Yeah.
That was really... I'm not going to do any more naughty plugs like that. I promise. No more than that. Should we talk Wigan, finally?
Yes.
We're 25 minutes in. Let's talk about Saturday's opposition. On the preview show, so we did a bit of a mini Wigan preview on the Blue Monday Live. I was able to put up the... this season's kit for the first time. I don't actually own it, so it wasn't going up today because it's a minger. But a 1-0 win, one of our three wins, a 33% of our wins have come against Wigan this season.
Yes, indeed.
Which is a great stat. 15th of December, that was, just before Christmas. Lambert's first win. And I think on Saturday we kind of focused a little bit on the players that have come in and out since then. So I think we'll continue to do that. We'll do that with a bit more detail. The focus, I guess, that I have for us, Reece James is a player that I really like the look of. You picked him out in our preview before, and he's kind of moved up the pitch a little bit, as Callum Connolly did for us and Chalabra's done for us. But the other player that I want to focus on a little bit, who didn't play in the last match because of injury, who might be back, is Nick Powell. So where is the best place for us to start, Harry?
Let's start with the attacking midfield, because that's actually a big part of it. They play, in simple terms, they generally 90% of the time, one of their fans said, Paul Cook will play 4-2-3-1. Sometimes he'll switch it to 4-3-3, so you'll have a slightly more attacking extra midfielder. So and just move it a little bit further and move everything forward 10 yards at the attacking end. And he does like width. He's at the moment, you've got two wingers playing as fullbacks as well. So you have two sitting holding midfielders and the two fullbacks. The idea is they bomb forward and then the sitters will cover if necessary. But it's worth talking about the three in behind the striker, because they started brilliantly. They were something like third in the table, having played a game more, admittedly, in late September. They got off. They were rocking, cooking on gas, absolutely hammering along. And then slowly since then, there's been this narrative of decline, a combination of injuries, because they're one of the have-nots, they don't have strength and depth. So when players came out, they didn't have the ability, they didn't have the wealth of squad to be able to cover. Plus then a loss of form of some players. then those two things together, you saw them going backwards. And when we hit them in December, they were properly on that kind of curve going, on the downward curve.
We talked about the promotion bounce, because their home form was so brilliant, wasn't it?
Yep.
Last season. And there's always that momentum. And I guess the hope for Paul Cook is they can carry that on throughout the season. But as you say, those kind of culmination and those issues, particularly the injuries, have kind of prevented them from doing that. And they are hovering outside the relegation zone. They have the draw to Rotherham a couple of weeks ago is probably quite a significant result as well. One where they probably look to move gaps, to build a gap. But is there a sign of things? Certainly the injury crisis we mentioned, pal, the injuries have sorted themselves out, aren't they? So is there a hope that they might have a bit of an upturn?
I think they're going to be safe. I think they're going to get out of it. I was looking at, because you look at them and you think, okay, what's the direction of travel? They've only scored 9 goals in the last 10 games. This is the output of all of the problems that they've had. And 16 conceded, you know, since we played them in December. Lack of creativity, lack of confidence. But the players are starting to come back now. The players that they had earlier in the season, you're suddenly starting to see the creativity come back into the side. They're suddenly starting to play a little bit more on the front foot. And I think just as we're gathering momentum towards the end of the season, I think just as equally they're going to be gathering momentum as well. I'd be surprised, given, unless all these players that are coming back from injury are being brought back too early and then they go off again, then I think they may have enough to get out of it. They're worried. They think it's between them and Rotherham for the final place, assuming us and Bolton are down. But
Millwall got a good win, didn't they, midweek as well?
Yeah, so Millwall they did. Yeah,
a cup run might be a distraction, mind you.
Yeah, and Nelson Oliveira going to Reading has absolutely spooked them. It really has. That they don't like that. But I looking at the way they're playing, looking at the players who've come back, I think the way they're playing is the worry, but not the players who've come back. We'll move on to the players, because we'll talk about the wingers and we'll talk about the playmaker because in the 4-2-3-1 in a second. But just some simple overall points to mention. And we'll pick off Paul Cook in transit, if that's okay. The fear, Cook, as we know, has a reputation of playing stylish, attractive football. He did it with Portsmouth. He did it in the promotion season with Wigan, generally on the front foot, playing pass and move. You know, very positive, optimistic football is the kind of style of it. As the season has gone on, the creativity and the confidence has drained out of the team. And they described it as turgid football. That word has kept coming up time and time again. The last two games against Rotherham, one of them said it was something like he'd never seen the ball in the air in 20 years of watching Wigan as much. It was everything, every championship cliche you could have. Wigan away to Rotherham on a February day, and you know, it's just who wants it? Who wants it more? Yeah. That kind of thing. It was very much that. But also a lack of urgency and desire, which kind of echoes the confidence point. But this was happening in the away games because they've got a dire away record.
Yeah,
but the fear is it's starting to creep into the home games.
Right, because I remember us talking about that. If there's ever a game to get our away form back on track, it's Ipswich away. Us doing a double over them would be a real blow, wouldn't it?
That would be amazing. And they are worried. They fear that if we did win, because they would be then. I think the headline I've used to my TWTD piece is that, you know, if we lose to Ipswich, we're properly in the mire, something like that. It's that's the fear they have. They feel they're playing within themselves.
Is that a sense of Paul Cook going into damage limitation or risk reverse mode, is that?
The big concern is, the last two games, that's what they don't understand. The tactics they get at Rotherham, the last thing you do against Rotherham is go out and try and play direct against them. It's like doing it against Millwall. You just don't do that. If the thing is, when they play the ball on the deck, and they talk about this, when they play it on the deck, they can actually knife their way through teams because they're actually quite stylish, attractive, and they have got good footballers in the team. So why they would choose to go direct? And linked with that was the sale of Will Grigg and the purchase of Clark. They've brought Leon Clark.
Yes, yeah, so that's significant, isn't it?
But that is significant because they're worried that that signifies an emphasis on more direct football. Because Clark,
Grigg's very diminutive. I saw him at Sunderland, Oxford. He was tiny, but buzzing around. Clark is not that, is he?
He's not
6 foot he's plus. Old, I think he must be.
He's older. He's in his mid-30s. This, you know, he's coming to the end of his career now. He's not a mobile. He's like, looks like when Forrest took Daryl Murphy almost. You're bringing in a hard-working but broadly static target man who is a good finisher, as opposed to a smaller geometric player who will link with the wingers, link with the playmaker, and
drop
and actually
a bit deeper. Yeah.
And add a lot more to the overall team, although per se he may not be a better out and out finisher. The money they got for Sunderland, several people have talked about a £4 million fee, and I did wonder, was there a parallel with Waghorn, that the money is really too good to turn down, but only if you have a replacement.
Yeah, well, it looks like a bargain replacement, doesn't it, as well?
Yeah.
Are we going to come back and talk about Garner? Because Garner hasn't really featured, yeah, to see, but...
No, he hasn't. We're jumping all around here. Sorry. You're fine. You're brilliant. We'll start at the top and we'll work our way back then. We've kind of covered Clark. The other comment, the more cynical one, he played brilliantly in the opening game. Most of the new additions have only played three games. QPR, a win at home, plus then they had a draw at Rotherham, the one-all draw, and then 10 days ago, they didn't play last weekend because whoever they were playing, I think it was Derby, were in the cup. So they played 10 days ago at home to Stoke and drew nil-all. So this is the game we looked at in inverse, as it were, when we looked at Stoke. Clark played brilliantly in the first game, scored a goal against Queen's Park Rangers, was less good in the last two games. No hold-up play, little movement. One of them described him as Jurassic Clark, which was very unkind.
That's brilliant.
That's horrible.
I love that. Well, it's the pun more than anything else.
It's really clever. He comes alive when the ball comes into the box. His movement and predatory instincts are infinitely improved since he was last here. So he is good in the box, but just don't expect anything else from him. You've got to do all the work to prepare the ground for him.
Clark, yeah. And he'll score. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly that, yeah. He is, if ever we do a CV game again, Leon Clark is perfect for it, because if you try and list all of the teams, including Coventry, he's the list is absolutely vast.
They were unhappy when he left Coventry. Yeah. I think he was on a really good scoring run. And I think he might have been in the same team as McGoldrick. I might have made that up, though. I'm going to have to look that up later on.
I know he went Wolves, who hated him, to Coventry, where he played well, and Wolves then took him back again. And it was the past revisited, really. Garner up front, let's briefly mention him, because he is now a perfect impact sub. And they don't buy the antics. We joked about this before.
The
rubbing the back of the head thing that he does. And he put, look, just see how much blood was drawn. I love that thing he does in the game. Garner's great. The thing about Garner, if we said before, if the game is boring, keep an eye on what Joey's up to, because there'll be some subplot going on wherever part of the field he's on. He's very theatrical. He spends more time rolling around on the floor. He's up to his old tricks. That was the phrase, up to his old tricks of playing the man, not the ball, and it doesn't work. They said actually he can be rough and aggressive. We know he's good in the air. He's physical. He pressurizes defenders into mistakes, but he's more effective when his talent is more controlled and channeled into his play than his off the ball antics. Yeah, they feel he undermines himself, they say.
Fair. Just very quickly, Hurst mentions Garner, Waghorn and Webster in this podcast interview, and says all of them wanted to leave, and if I'd made them stay, I would have had the bad version of Garner, the bad version of Waghorn and stuff. Just that prompted me the thought on Garner, because I think he was always wanted to go back up north, but as a professional he probably would have stuck around if we didn't want to sell him. And then it makes you think about Hurst and his ability to motivate players, whether he had any character about him to encourage them to stay. That was something that I picked up on as well. Sorry, as an aside.
No, it's true. No, it's the excuses again. It's the giving up too easily. It's the kind of externalizing a problem. Was it Dave Railsford talks about fourth to eighth mentality? People who finish medal in tournaments usually take ownership of any problems that are outside their control, and they make the most of them. People who finish fourth to eighth will usually externalize the problem. And Hurst is a classic example of that. He really is. If this had happened, then we'd have done all right. You've got to own it, and you've got to take control of it. Garner, I don't know. I think he would have been professional. He would have stayed. In the way Freddie has, he would have led the line and done what he could to the best of his ability. He is a professional. So let's look at the guys. Let's look at the playmakers and the wingers, because this is fascinating. Nick Powell, we talked about this before we started recording. There is a small side point to Powell. He's a playmaker. He came to them from Manchester United. Stacks of England youth under 21 appearances all the way through. He was seen as a really bright prospect. He's 24 now. I think he came to United from Crewe, if memory serves me right.
We tried to sign him from Crewe.
Yeah,
and then Man United came in, and obviously that's never.
Yeah, that's going to end it. No, Jewell, to be fair, had an eye for a player. Not always, but he did. Given that Cresswell, but there is an issue, I mentioned Knudsen in this context because Powell is out of contract this summer.
Oh, is he?
And so you're suddenly getting
eyes
the whole.
Elsewhere, is it?
The fog of suspicion has descended.
Oh, really? So the because yeah. he's been out with injuries. He had, I think, did you say his wife yeah. gave? We were talking about this before. His wife yeah. gave birth recently, so he missed a game
for that.
But are these all adding to the conspiracy yeah. theories? Are they?
Yeah. He was out. He was out since late November, early December. He missed a game in December against us, and the problem is that he came off the bench against Stoke. That was his first time back in months, and so he had a run out. That was 10 days ago, so you could assume if they've played behind closed doors games in the last 10 days, whatever, I don't know what they've done training wise that he may well be match fit. He could start. He is a threat, fast, hard working, strong in the air, and he can get goals and assists, so he's not just a deep line playmaker. I'd call him a second striker as much as anything, the way he can burst forward. He is a problem because of the quality he has. The criticism, it's a fine one they make, but it's worth mentioning. One of them said he's an unusual player with so much potential, but half the time they don't think he knows what he's going to do.
Okay.
So he hasn't quite mapped out. He's got too many options almost, and it could be experience and judgment. But at 24, you would expect to see that blossoming by now. You really yeah. would.
Is yeah. he a set piece taker as well? Am I right in thinking he takes a free kick?
He does. Yeah.
I think I remember him seeing him yeah. score quite a decent free kick early in the season.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
So, the other player that I've got listed. Any more on Powell before we move on?
No, but the other playmaker worth mentioning, because he did play against us in the first game, was Josh Windus.
Oh yeah.
Just worth mentioning him because he may well start. Great movement, great anticipation, but he's 25. He came from Rangers, if I'm not mistaken. They summed him up against Rotherham. He had the skill, movement, and pace to hurt teams, but also the powder puff physicality that's so frustrating. So if he'd managed to play to his strength, he could have actually unlocked Rotherham and caused them even more problems. But often he will let centre-backs have the ball without challenging them, and he backs out of challenges he could have attempted. And I don't think it's the Ince thing we talked about last week, where Ince makes the show of doing it. I think with Windus, it's actually a confidence thing more than anything else.
Okay.
He's a technically good player. He's like a poor man's Powell, I would say, really, describing him as that. Good movement, good anticipation, and quite good on the ball, but championship good on the ball, whereas Powell could be a level above.
Another player that could have been signed by Paul Hurst, actually. The two players that I wanted to go on to, though, were Morsi and James.
Yep.
I suspect that's probably where you got your bulk of your concerns, is it?
It's interesting to watch. James, we mentioned it in the live show. He played it right back against us.
Hit the bar, didn't he? We mentioned that too. Great shot. Really lovely kind of cross-come shot type thing, wasn't it?
Lethal. He is. This guy is dangerous. He really is. He moved into right back. Morsi, we talked about Morsi as well before the last game, the way they said he's a yellow card merchant. Time and time again, he's the lack of discipline. He can go careering into challenges. He picks up yellow cards. He got a two-match suspension for the number of yellow cards he picked up. And that prompted Paul Cook to move Reece James in from right back into a holding midfield role. And initially, in the first half an hour, it took him a while to get used to it, but then after half an hour he cracked it and he knew exactly what he needed to do. The thing about James, he's very forward thinking. That's the word. Forward is the word you have always in your mind with him. He's strong at the tackle. He always wants the ball, but he always wants to go forward with it. He's got that dynamism no matter where you put him on the field. One of them said he can play anywhere. You can tell watching that he loves the game. Really good at passing, always up for the battle, and he could be the midfielder. If Morsi is they describe him as a driving force, but more in the sense of doing the pressing, doing the water carrying. He's kind of a unit which provides industry in front of the back, but limited technically. They say when he gets the ball and he gets into a dangerous position, he will often slow the tempo down because he's not quite sure what to do. Whereas you feel with James, if James breaks forward with the ball, his instincts will be more...
He can bomb on a little bit, maybe.
He can bomb on. Yeah. And the fear could be that if you've got Reece James sitting in behind Nick Powell, that's not a good situation from our point of view. But James is one to watch. We talked about this in the live show. Somebody just drew a parallel with him being a David Beckham quiz question.
I was going to get you to do this one. Yeah, I mean, that's high praise, right?
It is, yeah. They're absolutely convinced, and nothing has changed their view from December, that he's going to be a future England international. They don't think he's one that Chelsea are going to bring in and then farm out. Just keep an eye on him at the game, as I say. One of them said, I'm just going to enjoy watching this young man play for the rest of the season because he won't be back here next year. It's one of those, it's a bit like Gio for us. It's just a happy memory, really, but you don't forget it. But he's just an absolute natural footballer, and it took him a little while, as in half an hour, to get to handle the defensive midfield role, because it's a more tricky one, way more tricky than right back, which is tactically quite simple. But he got it straight away, and instinctively he knew the positioning, the technique all just came to him. So I think most of them think that James and Morsi is the ideal central mid, the defensive, the sitting partnership, as it were. Plan B, it's a couple of names worth mentioning. I don't think we're going to see Gary Roberts. I know he's a winger, but they've been seeing him. He's been used as a bench option centrally a few times as well.
Did he play the whole game against us?
He did.
And we said he'll be off at 60 minutes. And I was thinking, well, when's he going to go off then? But he managed to last the whole thing, didn't he?
He did, yeah. They reckon he should. I mean, he's another one for the CV game, and you look at all the teams he's played for. But he's, you know, he's an absolute veteran. But they love him there. They feel even if he doesn't play next season for them, they want him there for a couple of more years because of the role model. The fact that he's such a great player to
good
have
ambassador,
in the
squad. Yeah.
Yeah, but they don't think he has the legs to play a wide role. The other Plan B players, Lee Evans is probably the most likely other one to come in. He came over from Sheffield United. Used to play for Wolves in the kind of Kenny Jackett era. A cog that makes a team function when they play well. But funnily enough, he's a player whose form has diminished as the team has declined as the season has gone on, because I think that footballing on the deck style suits his style of play more. He's a very industrious player, covers every blade of grass, sets the press from the front and works tirelessly. But they've been talking about the fact that he's been playing a lot of safe and sideways passes as the team have lost confidence. Now, when you get better players in there, that might all disappear and he'll get back to what he does best. Also a question mark over lack of pace, which is probably why he's in the championship and not at a higher level. But a cog who makes the team function when they play well. It could be if they switch James back to right back, and you could see Morsi and Evans play against us, because that was the partnership that played at Portman Road.
Portman Road, I was about to say,
Two other quick side mentions. Darren McGibson. I don't know if you blame. He's just not trusted by them. There's always a risk of putting Darren Gibson in and losing the game. An awful waste of money. He was the guy who came from Sunderland last year. He was a free transfer.
Yeah. Did we talk about him before? I think we possibly did about the Sunderland Till I Die documentary.
Yes. Yeah.
He had a really troubled end to his spell at Sunderland, so I'm not surprised I don't trust him.
Yeah. I mean, you look at his career, Manchester United, Everton, Sunderland, Wigan, you know, the direction of travel, you know, it's quite sad. He's 31 now. One of them said, cynically, they said there's a piece on the club website in which he says he's happy and enjoying his football. Well, I'm pleased someone is. It's quite vicious. So so I don't think we'll see him, but it's worth mentioning. You know, another one of the where are they now types. Yeah. The other guy worth mentioning. He's only played once. I don't know if we'll see him on Saturday. Benny Banningime, I think is how you pronounce it. He's a 20-year-old loanee from Everton who's come in. Connolly went out. Banningime has come in. The poor guy, he did okay. He played the full game against Rotherham. Now, he's come from the Everton Academy. So they said about him at Rotherham, this was the game where the ball was sort of flying around in the air, threatening all avian life. He didn't look too strong and arguably didn't look like he was too keen to have the ball. He didn't disgrace himself and looked fairly composed when he got the ball. He made some decent tackles as well. And the best line of it was, he was probably scratching his head thinking, we didn't play this badly at Everton's Academy. You know, it would have been...
Yeah, that's a baptism of fire, isn't it?
Just going from
Work on those neck muscles so you can see where the ball is. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, all this lovely technical geometric football, it's all really nice.
School of Science, yeah.
And so, exactly, that's what they call it, isn't it? Yeah. Suddenly going to Rotherham
the
on a
school of
Rotherham.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly, you know, can we not knock it? anyway, so that's the midfield. So but I think it'll be James and Morsi in behind, presumably Windass, possibly Powell.
Okay.
Keep an eye, we'll see what they get up to.
Should we do with the wide options now?
Yeah, let's do the wide options.
There's plenty here, isn't there?
Yeah, this is a huge part of the story of their season. Sorry, you go ahead.
Dump in the name Pilkington straight away, because that'll be the one that Town fans have will know and be thinking about, given he was also another player that almost signed for us.
Yeah.
Did he have a really good debut against Villa? I think they beat Villa at home, and I think
did
he got two assists, mate, or scored or something?
Oh, he did, yeah.
He's kind of disappeared a little bit from... He's not... Well, you can tell us more about him, Harry.
No, it's interesting, because he is... No, you're right. We can do this. Their home form is something... They can get unlocked and they can lose badly at home. I think Sheffield United beat them 3-0. They can get undone, but they can, you know, they beat Aston Villa 3-0. They beat Queen's Park Rangers 2-1. Mm. So let's keep all our optimism in the context of that. They can, you know, they can turn it on at home. And Pilkington, they did no answer. They really had no answer to him, Villa. Whereas in the early season form, when they were flying, when Wigan were flying, they had Michael Jacobs on the left and Gavin Massey on the right, two direct wingers. As I say, Cook likes players who will run with the ball. He likes his width, and you remember Enda Stevens when he played for Portsmouth in the cup match. That's the style of play he likes. And these two were doing a fantastic job until the injuries all hit. And the feeling is now that it looks like Jacobs is still the left winger. So he offers directness. He takes players on direct running, penetrating defences. Less effective when they're forced deep as a team. If you put them on the back foot, you can blunt the wingers just by playing the ball in their third, not letting them out. But he has a trick in him, Jacobs, sharp and dangerous. Pilkington is different. And if you draw a parallel with Norwich, these are like the poor man's Buendia and Hernandez. Jacobs being the Hernandez direct runner, Pilkington being more the Buendia type, an inverted, he's a left winger, inverted and playing on the right, where he can cut inside.
Yep.
Technical. And his use of the ball, he doesn't give it away, he doesn't hoof, he always passes, and he has purpose. And the phrase they said was he can provide a final ball after doing all the initial hard work. That's what they like about him. Cardiff have used him as a number 10 at times. I remember that's when they were struggling for options. He played in behind the striker. Great feet with the ball, a turn of pace, and he does add spark to the midfield. So he's the brains of the wingers, as it were. He will certainly start against us, no question about that. But him on one side, I always think that if you have a tricky technical winger and you have a fast direct winger, that's actually a really nice combination, and it does work. So if you do flick them over, you're asking a lot more questions of full backs. He tends not to do that. Cook tends to keep them on, from what I've seen anyway, the comments, they don't seem to flick across to put them on different full backs, but he always has that option.
Do you say Pilkington is likely to be on the right?
He'll be on the right, no question. So and Jacob's
he's
on the left.
Gonna
yeah.
make, yeah, so our left back pick is going to have to be smart, isn't it?
It's going to have to be smart, but it's less a question of being done for pace. It's a question of shape and positioning and just
now
making sure.
Though. Pilkington's quite streetwise, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. So it's going to be just holding, you know, as I say, just holding your positioning and just making sure that if you're going to show him anywhere, show him wide, I would say, because I'd say he'd be less effective crossing from the byline than he would necessarily cutting inside. I think that's a bit like Buendia that way.
In terms of the other wide, the fullbacks, then, just very quickly, because James definitely bombed on and Paul Monroe, didn't he? It was Connolly at left back and he was out of position.
Right back,
and we talked about Connolly that he wasn't particularly favoured there and has gone. So
two quick one liners on the other remaining wingers, and we'll come on to the fullbacks because that links perfectly. Because you've got to look at the fullbacks and wingers as teams, very much in the Cook model. But the other player who may feature, he's less good than Jacobs, is Gavin Massey. He's a right winger, came from Orient, and they were worried about him at the start of the season, but he really blossomed in the Championship before he got injured. And again, he's another Jacobs who takes on defenders, commits them with pace, gets in behind defences. The same things as they were saying of Jacobs, just probably not quite the same level of quality. So the other possibility is you could see Pilkington on the left and you could see Massey on the right, that could be a switch that he could do at some point in the game. His movement off the ball is good, but he doesn't quite have the threat that Jacobs does. And the final one worth mentioning, as he's only good for 20 minutes, but he is good when he is on, is Callum McManaman. He's still there, the left winger.
Yeah, came off the bench in Bournemouth.
Yeah, but he's fits and starts. He's only good for 20 minutes, but he can produce moments of quality in that 20 minutes that he's on. But he's remarkable.
Also played both sides, I think.
Yeah,
so
he can do, but he completely disappears. So moving on, just worth mentioning, getting on to the full backs, though, we've got Nathan Byrne and Kai Naismith. And Byrne sitting in behind Pilkington on the right and Kai Naismith sitting in behind Jacobs on the left. Yep.
Kai Naismith, is he a winger? He's definitely an attacking player, I thought.
They're both wingers.
Right, so there's, yeah.
More accurately, they both think they're wingers. That's the best way to describe it. Okay.
I think Byrne, I can still play football, possibly.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Well, exactly. In Byrne's case specifically, Naismith is a proper winger. Let's look at him. He's a left back. I don't know what it is. We seem to have loads of left backs, and every week we go around lots of different teams, and they never have a left back. It's really funny. You know, last week it was this
Stoke, exactly.
You know, it just happens week in, week out. You think, well, where are we hoarding them or something? Because we don't seem to have a problem with left. You know, we've got Nudson, we've got Kenlock. We can come up with options.
Let's have Callum Elder. Let's have Callum Elder.
Callum Elder. Exactly. It's great fun. But anyway, no. So Kai Naismith, he's the one to target. He's flaky at the back. He's something to offer going forward, but his defensive positioning is shocking. This is high praise. The best crosser of a ball we've had since Jan Bossejour. There's a name for the pass. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He can cost us with his mistakes, but he come close to scoring from his brilliant crosses. He's a winger playing at left back. Everything they say about him, his lack of positional awareness is awful. His body positions are always wrong. That's why he ends up on his backside against good wingers. But he's never been and never will be a left back. It's not his position. It's not his problem. But that's where he's being played. And he is being targeted. So that's where we could get at them. The plan B, briefly, is a guy called Anthony Robinson. He was a guy who came from on loan from Everton, 21-year-old American international. Dynamite going forward, but an utter liability in defence. And he's actually a left back. Anyway.
You're making me feel more confident, Harry.
No, exactly. Exactly. You know, whoever,
square pegs and round holes and all that.
Just get somebody out on the right and let's see if we can get in behind them. He's been out with an ankle injury, but he's been training again. I don't know whether he'll start or whether they're confident enough. It's a question of whether Robinson is less.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You win. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Dangerous to his own team than Naismith, I think is probably the best way to put it. There's neither of them fill them with any confidence. Whereas on the right-hand side, Nathan Byrne, and we talked about this back in December, he's a player, he's always said he's a right winger. This was a big discussion. That's where he feels his best position is. And if you ask any Wigan fan, they'll say he's not a right winger. He's a very good fullback. He's a better out-and-out defender than Reece James when he was there, but he doesn't pose much of a threat. He played at right wing at Portman Road.
He did, yeah. I was just looking at that.
In front of James, yeah. And his crossing can be woeful. His distribution goes awry. He's a decent winger, but he can do a job there. But he's probably better at pressing a defender than necessarily create. He's almost like a Mick-like winger, somebody who's good at shutting down a defender.
Can do a shift, yeah.
He can do a shift, yeah. He works the socks off. Occasionally, he can nullify tricky wingers. Occasionally, gives his man too much space, but he doesn't have the killer instinct to damage teams as a winger. He is a defender, basically, and he needs to realise that. He came from Wolves. He's ex-Wolves. So that's the two fullbacks, but you can see, you have to look at them. If you're watching the game, look at them as a team, just to see how they're operating. It'll be Byrne with Pilkington and Naismith with Jacobs. And in that sense, you could argue they'll have more of a threat on the left, but just as equally, they could be more vulnerable. They could be got in behind on
but
the left.
But yeah, the inclination is for them to bomb on as well, as you say. So yeah, it might be up the pitch, mightn't they?
They could be both up the pitch. Whereas on the other side, you feel Pilkington and Byrne, whatever Byrne thinks about himself, you'd feel that's a more balanced pairing. So, which leaves us then with the central defenders. Should we start with the keeper? Can we do the keeper?
Yeah, the keeper's changed. You were telling me
it has changed. It was Christian Walton beforehand, who was on loan, I think, from Brighton last year, and then he was reloaned for this season back from Brighton again. So he helped them get promoted last year, but he's been dropped in place of Jamie Jones, and this is quite fascinating because the two of them are almost the inverted mirror image of each other. Walton is a great shot stopper, but can't command his area and refuses to come out with the ball. Jones is the complete opposite. Jones is brilliant at commanding his area. He's comes off his line for 50-50s. He's heroic. He's alert. He takes good positions. He's quick to respond to potential threats, diving at strikers' feet. They talk about all of this, but he's awful from range. And it's worth looking
at. Too fast of a goalkeeper then, yeah?
Exactly. You put the two of them in together, you've got it perfect. It's really bizarre, this. Jones is much more assured than Walton, but Forrest, they played Forrest a few weeks back and they were beaten. I think it was a 3-0 or 3-1. 3-1 they were beaten.
Yeah.
And all the Forest goals were from long range. And they played the QPR the next week. And, of course, Steve McLaren had looked at the video. And apparently Queen's Park Rangers were shooting from virtually the centre circle because they recognised it. They thought this might work. They kind of overdid it a bit. But it's one of those things, if you get space on the edge of the D or somewhere around there, just have a crack. You never know.
We didn't do too much of that on Saturday. I was thinking we should be shooting a bit more from range against Stoke, and we didn't do that. So,
Yeah,
maybe we'll.
certainly against this keeper, it might be worth just let fly every so often and follow up. You know, say to
Alan Judge,
Judge. If you find a half a yard, let fly and see what happens. He came from Stevenage and he's broken in. They like him. They're more confident in him than they are in Walton, actually, as the season has gone on. So that then leaves us with the four centre backs, and shall we start with Danny Fox?
Is he a new signing?
Yes, he is. Came in from Nottingham Forest.
Yeah, it's a name that's been around in the Championship for quite a while now. Yeah.
Well, I've been doing
Rangers
the
Rangers as well.
Yeah, Rangers going back. That's right. And indeed, Coventry, believe it or not, in the past.
Oh wow, wow. Hashtag Coventry.
Every time I find an ex Coventry, when I prep up for this, it's always in bold.
I need a hashtag play up Sky Blues or something, Claxon or something, don't I? I'm not doing anything for my reputation by going to Coventry under 23 matches either.
Exactly.
No, happened it's a to see him switch.
Anyway, so Danny Fox, I mean, I've been doing the notes for TWTD for about 6 years or so now, and the thing you come across time and time again when you go to Forest was you knew damn well they were going to hammer Danny Fox at left back. He was appalling out there. His positioning was wrong. He didn't have pace. His reading of the game was terrible, and he was always isolated, and then he'd be dropped, and then he'd come back in again. A new manager would come along, as was the case at Forest a lot, and then they'd put him back in again, and the same cycle.
Yes, find out, happening. Yeah.
You'd find the same problem out. Until Aitor Karanka came along, and Karanka moved him into centre-back, left centre-back, and he has blossomed.
Mm.
That's what's made it, that's rebuilt his career. He's not young, he's 32 now, but they see him as a captain and a leader, and they said that Cook was keen to integrate him into the team as quickly as possible. They lost Dan Byrne. Do you remember Dan Byrne, who played with them and was sold again to Brighton, and Brighton loaned him back for the first half of the year, a slightly weird one. But then they weren't confident about Byrne. He was physical, but they felt he was struggling a bit in the Championship. He was taken back by Brighton, and he's gone now. He's now a Brighton player, nothing to do with Wigan. And Fox, they see him as coming in to replace him. Organises the defence well, and he does have a pass in him as well. That's the other thing. He can pass through the lines, particularly not so much the defensive midfielders, but he can pick out the three behind the striker. That's what he's really, really good at doing. He has an eye for pass. He was clattered against Rotherham and he was substituted. I think he was concussed. He was stretchered off, so he missed the Stoke game a few days later, but he will start against us. I'd be surprised if he doesn't.
Yeah, he's had a week off, hasn't he?
He's had a week off now to properly recover. He played for Scotland back in the day as well. Ooh. So who do you play with him? You've got two choices. Well, you have three choices. Well, there's a bit of a where are they now we'll finish with. But Shay Dunkley we'll start with first, because he's the one I think will start. I love this phrase. He was in his element against Rotherham. He does well when it's all battle and head tennis. He's an absolute unit. They said this sums it up. He was absolutely excellent at centre half against the physically imposing Sam Vokes, and we all saw Sam Vokes on Saturday. There's a lot of unitary going on. Yeah, he can't finish. He can't. This is what they said. But they said also they played Queen's Park Rangers earlier, and they said that he dealt really well with Matt Smith as well. So
another tall striker.
Another one of these kind of number nines. So basically, anybody who's got a set piece threat, if it's battle, it's head tennis, he's the great man. You know what's coming next, though. He struggles with the ball at his feet, but hopelessly overhits balls forward, which translates as hoofs, basically. He's a big old-fashioned stopper, but we need defenders who can make time on the ball. And again, that's a little concern. You need your physicality at the back, but maybe, again, is Cook moving away from the passing out from the back model when you put a player like Dunkley in, because he's a stopper. That's what he does. Plan B, and I'm not sure he'll play. I'd say he'll go with Dunkley and Fox. There's a guy called Cedric Kiepre who we talked about before.
He played at Portman Road, didn't he?
He did play at Portman Road, and he is a brave centre half who flings himself in front of everything but has some hairy moments. Most of them felt unforced errors. Many felt he should have had a red card against Queen's Park Rangers. He took somebody out when they were through on goal, and most of the Wigan fans on the match day thread were looking at each other going, oh dear, well, let's move on swiftly, kind of thing. He is a bit of a risk. They feel the championship as the season, some players grow into a season. He might be finding the championship a bit too much as the season goes on.
He's gone from being solid. Do you reckon?
You could argue that, yes, that's a good point, actually. Yes, that's a really good parallel. Gone from being solid to dodgy more frequently. So he's one of those players, you take him out and use him every so often. But even on the ball, looks like he's dealing with the hot potato, either lumping it forward or playing it to a teammate who will be caught in possession, basically. He's missing a lot of headers and beaten to the ball. His background, he's from the Ivory Coast. Well, I think he's French-born, but he's Ivory Coast under 23. Came through the Paris Saint-Germain youth, was taken by Leicester, for whom he didn't play, went on to Motherwell, where he did play, and came from Motherwell to Wigan. So that was his slightly colourful...
That's a good CV game as well.
CV. It's a great CV game. You can spot him in a minute. But if he plays... I would target him as well, because he's got a rick in him, basically. But I think it'll be Dunkley and Fox. And the other person who you clocked was
another where are they now? Jonas Olsen.
Yes, indeed.
He must be mid 30s now. Who early in his career, well, at West Brom is where people were known from. He was quite a good ball playing centre back. He was physical. He's a unit as well. Long flowing hair. I used to remember him marauding forward, and then Pulis came in, and I think that was probably did for him. I think he's, not really fit. But yeah, I was surprised to see him. I did my little bit of research beforehand, and I saw him in the team. Has he played yet?
Not yet, no. He was on the bench for the Stoke game. They reckon, I'm not even sure he's at James Collins level there. I think he's very much he'll help Dunkley particularly and keep Ray improve. They might use him. One of them said a monster who will frighten teams at corners. Mm. And I'm not sure of the actual height. They said a 6'6" defender to counter championship giants. He went back to Sweden and played for Djurgårdens, who I think are in the Swedish first division. Left there, I think they have a different season to us. He left there in January and was signed as a free agent on the 1st of Feb. So he's come in. He may feature, or he may feature as a bench option. I don't know.
But it's experience, isn't he? That's positive, but a little bit immobile now.
Yeah, so that's Wigan. That's what Wigan. We're up against. It's interesting to have a look and see. Yeah, I think they're going to be safe as these creative players start coming back. I think I think they have enough in there to get themselves out of it, as long as Cook doesn't go defensive. If we see them playing long, I would actually be quite reassured on Saturday. If they're starting to play the ball geometrically up the field, I think they'll ask us more questions, but. Then, of course, we've got our own questions to ask them as well, which is quite good.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, brilliant stuff as always, Harry. Really enjoyed that. Before we move away from Wigan, I'll quickly do my kits for those of you watching on YouTube.
Yes, indeed. So
one side, we've got the 2016-17 Chevron kit. We beat them 3-0 that season. I think they went down. That's where they're Warren Joyce and Gary Caldwell and someone else took them down. So that's the 3-0. Freddie Sears and McGoldrick scored the goals, which I can't remember. I had to watch the goals back on YouTube. I couldn't tell you anything about that game. And then one which is more familiar, maybe for some people. We beat Wigan 4-0 in a two-legged League Cup tie, 92-93. Drew 2-2 or 1-1 away, I think. That was the Wigan team. Wigan kit, they were sponsored by Heinz.
Oh, God, yes.
If you remember that, the blue kit.
I do.
So we beat them 4-0 at home in the second leg of that League Cup tie. So that's the kits. Mm-hmm. Should we do some Q&A?
By all means.
Let's see if I can load them up and find them. I need to ask one of them because he was my... I was sat alongside him at the Coventry, actually. Let's see. Kevin Hyam. Yeah, hello, Kevin. Thank you for... your question and your company on Monday. Will we struggle to hold on to Ted Bishop if when we get relegated? If he carries on this form, even though he signed a new contract, I worry a championship team may come in and take a chance that he will get back to his 14-15 form. Any thoughts on Bishop's form first and foremost, Harry? Because he was good on Saturday, I thought.
He was a breath
whether,
of fresh.
Whether anyone might come in for him.
God, I hope not. He was an absolute breath of fresh air on Saturday, wasn't he? He was brilliant. I loved watching him play. It was like Teddy of old, really, just knifing his way through and really you could see him getting inside Stoke players' heads, no question about that. You could see they were conscious of him, and he was also lifting the crowd and taking us up the field.
Yeah, that was really important, wasn't it?
Yeah, I just hope every player has a price, and if we do go down, the Marcus will have his beloved calculator out, I've no doubt. But my
Abacus
hope
probably more on.
I just hope he would be one I would be. I really would fear losing him, because I would love him to have a brilliant season with us, and he could tear it up in League One. Yeah. I always worry when people, there is that fear that when people are given new contracts, it's with a view to making sure that we price in our value to them, so therefore we can sell them on at a decent profit. But I hope not in his case. I would love him to stay. I really would.
Agreed.
It was a joy seeing him. It really was. I still remember his goal against Bournemouth, I should say, in the famous 2-2 draw. It was such a clever side footed shot.
Great goal, yeah.
That great, great game. Yeah. Anyway. Mm. Yep.
A new era. Ipswich John asks, on a similar kind of theme about under 23s and under 18s. Now, Lambert settled on a formation where we see the under 23s and then under 18s mirroring this. And do you think we could see Ndarba, Dobrell, Bailey Clements break into the team before the end of the season? We've kind of talked about that. Any thoughts about the idea that the 18s and 23s mirror the diamond? Because I don't think they did it on Monday. Do you think they should? Is that something that you like, a continuity throughout the under 18, the academy teams?
Yeah. I'm less hung up on formations. It's more patterns of play for me. As long as we're all, the big problem was, I think, with Mick, that the pathway up to the under 23s was, as we've seen under Brian, it was passing, geometric, pass and move play, technical, etc. And then you suddenly, bang, you went up to Mick. and there was the pathway suddenly, the bridge of death had been put in place, and from Monty Python, could you get across it, kind of thing. It was almost impossible. And he talked about that a lot in today's press conference.
He did talk about the pathway, didn't he? Quite a lot.
Yeah, he did, yeah. Yeah. I think it's less about formation and it's more about style of play and thinking. Formations tell you so much, but it's then what you do with the ball, because you can play 4-4-2 any number of different ways. So I think there will be a stronger core. I think Lambert absolutely believes it, and he's probably the manager that Evans has got who is most wedded to making that connection, listening to the people that we've had before and seeing what we're seeing on the pitch. I think so. In that situation, cause for great optimism. Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Benjamin Aria, should we drop down to League One next season? Will Marcus inevitably have to change the way the club is run? And will there also be changes to the way the academy is used? Just a thought from me on this one. I had a bit of a debate quite early on when it looked like our season wasn't going to pan out as way we hoped. The academy funding, with Category 2, I think the academy funding is separated out from the losses that we're allowed to make for financial fair play. But that money has to come from somewhere, doesn't it? We've already, the figure that's been quoted, the $7 million down to $700K for the TV money. My fear has always been, I know that Marcus Evans kind of talks about the importance of the academy, is that if you're putting £1 million a year into a Category 2 academy at League 1 where your turnover is less, that to me is a really easy way to get some money back and maybe downgrade it to a Category 3 perhaps. Any thoughts on what Marcus Evans might do to cut our cloth more accordingly? Any concerns about the academy from your perspective?
I fear then Marcus likes a cheap player, and the academy is a good source of cheap players. There is that way of looking at it.
Yeah.
And I think that would be an area where he would be less inclined to compromise. Particularly given that it's one of the key points of his 5-point plan. Exactly. If that would be risible if he did. So that's one point. But I do think just as equally, it is dangerous to think, I don't think many of us are, that just because we dropped down to League One, we can fill the team with Josh Emmanuels, because Josh Emmanuel got promoted with Rotherham. It's, you still have to have the balance between youth and experience within the team. And in that sense, there are dangers. I can't see much changing. I think it does give more opportunities, though, for us to bring through players, as long as we keep the balance between youth and experience. I think if Marcus is going to lose anything, he will lose the expensive players more readily than he will lose the academy.
Mm.
Yeah, that's my thing.
The Mick philosophy of giving players big wages. On that point, Harvey, who I met on Saturday, if the rumours are right about that Bart is on big money, do we have to sell him once we get relegated? he can see that being a potential problem with him on a long-term contract.
There's
a lot of chat about players on big wage reduction percentages because of relegation, but any thoughts on Bart's situation, particularly as a new contract last summer? Yeah,
it's a hard one. He could be. I remember, was it Nikola Zigic was it with Birmingham?
Yeah, great show. Yeah,
and he was on something like 70,000 a week. You know, when the club, you know, he was an absolute millstone around their, yeah, around their ankles, as it were, and they couldn't do anything about it. He played professionally. He did everything he could when he was there, but you know, you expect so much more
from those players, though, don't you?
At that money, your poor judgment sort of slaps you on the face for doing it, and you could argue that Bart's form this season has not reflected his salary, if that is the case, and you know, if we could lose his salary off the books, it with a heavy heart, you might say, well, maybe it's time for to draw a line under it. But then again, we've seen what he's like at his best. It's a very difficult one. I do think players who are on high salaries, there aren't that many of them. I don't think that's the thing. We're not going down, way down, with a large number of them. But I think that because there has been a fairly carefully nurtured wage structure from looking from the outside, I think Bart would be the most likely to go, given what he's on, if assuming that is the case. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. In terms of drawing a line under an era, Arthur Pickthorne asked, the last two games were the second and third times in 6 years that neither Chambers or Skuse has started. Is it an end of an era there?
Mm. This came up last week and it really set me thinking. It was a brilliant question, because we always assume Skuse, in he goes. You know, we know what he does. He does it so well. And Lambert said that, you know, just simply, you know, if he can keep Skuse next season, by all means he will, not just for what he does on the pitch, what he does off the field as well. Him and Chambers, in terms of keeping the right balance of youth and experience, if you can have those two incredibly experienced players anchoring the team, acting as a spine in League One, it would be absolutely superb. But for the first time I began to think, if we are changing our style of play, Hughes was perfect in the Mick world. He really was, where you're protected for, it's very static, it's you know, sort of Praetorian Guard football, you know, you're man the barricades. Whereas Skuse could pick a brilliant forward pass, and we noticed in his final season under Mick, he was getting up the field a lot more. He was trying to add that side to his game, but he isn't as natural at doing it as others. Mm. And it did make me wonder that if Lambert is moving to a really fluid style of play, that you might see, you know, Skuse not feature so much. But then again, Alexander Tetti was at Norwich. You know, there is a role for Skuse in the team, I think. It was the first time last week, and I realised, actually, you know, you can suddenly see a future beyond him, which is interesting.
I
don't know if you'd agree.
Yeah, well, Lambert talked them both up today, didn't he? He was quite
he did.
High praise. I think of the pair of them, you can see less of, you know, Chambers probably being more important and a more likely starter than Skuse perhaps next season. Personally, we talked about this before as well, keep them around just for their experience. You know, maybe this is the time to give them player coach contracts and start to move that, evolve in that direction. I think it'd be a shame to see both of them leave. I quite like Chambers' kind of attitude of, if we go down, if I'm the captain to take us down, or I'll be the captain to take us back up again.
I love that.
I want to give him the opportunity.
Hear her.
Mm. Jack Barham, do you think we will set out the team the same way we have the last two games? Or do you think we'll change it? Maybe Edwards on right wing, as he impressed when he came on against Stoke. Any thoughts on how we ended the game against Stoke and whether Edwards maybe have played himself into a starting option?
He was bright. He was definitely very bright. And, you know, when we look at yet another flaky left winger, and I think that was partly in Lambert's thinking as well with Lucas. Poor Lucas, he's a good player, but he didn't look that confident with the ball. And Stoke players on their match day thread were actually praising him. I read the match day thread and they said he had a good game. I just felt he was very nervous. Tentative was the word, I would say. And Edwards definitely was getting some joy down that side against him. You could argue with Wigan having a flaky left back that, you know, we could get at them, you know, give Kai Naismith an afternoon to think about. I think it would be tactical more than anything else. I think he'll probably stick with the diamond. If he's found a model that's working, leave it as that, and then throw Edwards on if we need a goal with half an hour to go. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
A couple more. Andy Grimes, we've talked about the academy under 23 players. I hope that's okay. I just wanted to ask one question about Judge and Keane. I'm trying to find it now. Where's Brad's question? Do you think there is any sign that the recent crop of youngsters signing professional contracts, I mean, the departure of the likes of Judge and Keane in the summer, albeit I know they're not permanent players, but he thinks there's a very big squad at the moment. Obviously, quite a lot of them on short-term deals or loans.
Yeah.
Any view that these pro deals for academy players is setting them up for the first team next season, or is it just a sign of the future?
It's a sign of the future, I would say, more than anything else. It's easier to blood them in League One and see what they're capable of and let them build, get a track record of experience, just like Josh Emmanuel did. You know, he got to virtually play the whole season. So you're kind of building your memory bank. So you've got things to look back on, your videos to analyse. You've got all of that to go with. But I can't see a team full of them. And ideally, we would keep Judge, if we keep Judge and Keane, a spine then of Chambers, Skuse, Judge, Keane in League One would be, you know, no one's going to argue with that.
Hold that thought. And Mullet's kind of added the angle in here about, and similar to the Bishop question, actually, about whether tying them down to contracts is to generate as much money out of them as possible. Any thoughts on that?
I wouldn't put that past Marcus at all. Oh, no, he's, you know, there's, it's a good, was it the, my the Italian mate Vince talks about, and or he's a Napoli fan, it talks about, or De Laurentiis famously, well, every player has a price, being no doubt, no player is beyond selling. Everybody does have a price.
Even so Andre Dizel, or, sense,
yeah. Even, yeah, exactly, you can't, you know.
Well, especially Andre Dizel, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly, but is, so in that sense, there will, yeah, that will be part of, literally part of Evans's calculations, no question about that. Yeah.
We'll end with this one from Will Airy. If we were to get relegated, who would be our most important player in League One?
Gosh.
I'll allow you to include potential signings that are currently on short-term deals or loans if you want to go that way.
Okay. Bloody hell. That's I'll try not to pause too long. I'm just sort of on this one. That's a hell of a question. Who would you... The cold logical answer would be Chambers in terms of the balance that he would bring to the team. But the other obvious player, if we can dream of keeping him, is Judge, because he would be, because he's, apart from his one serious injury, he's generally not been a player plagued with fitness problems, and you could just see him running riot in League One next year.
Yeah,
you really could. He would be every defensive midfielder's nightmare. You don't know where he'd pop up. It was, you know, he was, the way he played against Stoke, I mean, let's, you know, finish on this thought. It was a joy to watch him. He was everywhere. You know, one stage he'd be over on the left wing, next day he virtually had a free role almost, the way he was operating in the team. And he was popping up. He knew where to be to put question marks in Stoke's heads. It was fantastic. And the whole team being brought forward, and the way he was galvanizing everybody as well. It was the leadership as much as anything. So no, I guess, well, you know, I love Chambers. I love him to bits. But in terms of causing mayhem in League One, I would have Judge, no question.
Yeah, great shout. And I'll lob in Caden Jackson into the mix.
Oh, God, yes. Go on.
Maybe, or Ellis Harrison.
That's interesting, yeah.
I think we've talked about Hurst's signing.
With their know-how.
A stretch too far, being in the Championship. But I think a league below, I think Caden Jackson or Ellis Harrison are good for 15, 20 goals.
No question.
Possibly. Yeah. But I like Judge. I'd love, if we keep Judge, I'd be really confident.
Oh, it'd be fun. Really would.
Excellent. Thank you, everyone, for your questions. Sorry for the ones we didn't have time to read out. There was quite a lot of questions about the academy, so I think we've covered that quite well, I do say so myself. So let's finish off with some plugs, shall we? Do you want to do yours, Harry, then I'll finish off with mine?
Absolutely. The notes, the weekend notes, go up on TWTD at lunchtime tomorrow, and you can find them on at Harry from Bath. I always link them on my Twitter feed. So if you follow me on at Harry from Bath, you'll get the link will pop up at lunchtime tomorrow.
Brilliant stuff. You can follow me at Ipswich and the channel at Blue Monday ITFC. And again, be delighted if you guys could watch the top 10 sliding doors moments video that we've got out there now. The flagship show is back on Sunday. It'll be Ben and Amy, and me and Harry will arm wrestle to decide who is the third member of the team to join them on Sunday afternoon. But looking forward to that. And we're both going to Wigan, aren't we, Harry?
Indeed, looking forward to it. Greatly looking forward to it. Same, yes, yeah. I've heard many things. The Reading of the North, by all accounts. So,
the Reading of the North.
can't wait. I can't wait.
Fingers crossed, eh?
Have a great, indeed. Have a great weekend, everybody.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.